This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. How many inventors do you know? It's a profession that seems to have gone out of style with Thomas Edison. My guest, inventor David Levy, says he's a little hesitant to answer the "so what do you do" question at parties because of the reaction he gets. But since he left his job 7 years ago at Apple, where he worked on the design for the PowerBook, Levy has supported himself coming up with ideas for new products, including a miniature electronic keypad, a television remote in the shape of a football, a changeable tattoo, and a theft-proof bike seat. He holds more than a dozen patents on these and other even less easily described projects. In 1996, he won the prestigious Lamelson Award for Inventiveness from his alma mater, MIT. The history of independent inventors is rife with misery, tragedy, betrayal, and insanity. I asked David Levy if he has to censor his ideas just to survive.
Self-censoring is the exact opposite of what you need to do as an inventor. Invention is the process of taking down all those barriers of what your preconceptions of what shouldn't be or what isn't. And when you take all those away and you throw in some common sense and some knowledge of engineering and the way things could be, that's when invention happens.
So about what is your ratio of good ideas to really dumb ones?
I'd say there's 100 really dumb ideas for every good one. And for every, it takes 100 good ideas to make something that actually will generate some money. So I'd say 1,000 to 1, something like that.
So, and do you have recurring ideas, the same idea that you think of every day?
Embarrassingly, yes.
Like what?
Oh, because you'll go down and you'll see a problem and you'll think, oh my God, if only gravity wasn't there, this would be so simple. And that's your job, is to take away those barriers. And so I really do find myself thinking about anti-gravity machines and time travel and things that'll take a while to develop. I usually work for real horizons of 2 years, meaning technologies that are here now that can be put together in new ways and make something fairly quickly.
Let's talk about some of your patents that have made it onto store shelves. Your first invention was a thing called peelables.
Peelables. Yes.
Where did you get the idea for peelables?
Peelables was a late 80s idea. This is when floppy disks were becoming very prevalent and people were changing what was stored on their floppy disk constantly. Video cassettes were large. People were changing the labels or wanting to change the labels. And the result, because it was so hard to do, was that people were leaving labels blank. And it was just a screaming for a solution. And peelables was a pretty simple idea of just having multiple layers so that when you finish with the top layer, you can peel it off and have a fresh blank slate underneath.
So you got an immediate positive response to this?
I got immediate positive response from people who wanted to use the product. Interestingly, the largest opposition was ultimately from the manufacturers who thought, well, if we don't have labels, people often throw the things away. If we have an easy way for them to change it, we're going to sell fewer discs. And so it was an idea that appealed to people but not the companies. And that's one of the things I've learned, lessons learned, of an idea needs to appeal to selfish corporate interest, not just be a good idea from as seen from the people in the street.
I suppose the other thing is that times have changed and people, I think, rent so many more videos than they ever...
Another important lesson I've learned is... You're right. You're absolutely right. The lesson that I learned is that all inventions have windows. This was a very powerful idea back when people changed magnetic media constantly. It's no longer a good idea. And I think every invention falls in that category. Everything has a time, and if you miss that window, it's too late. And for peelables, it's too late.
You hold the patent on a tiny keyboard that I suppose could be used for a number of things, but also on these new email-sending telephones. What's the innovation? How did you get a patent for it? What's new?
I actually have 2 patents so far, and there's a 3rd one on the way for the basic... It's unfortunately... It's not something that can be done over radio. It's very visual. It's very three-dimensional. It's also very simple. The core of the idea is that real estate of the keyboard is reused multiple times in different ways so that you can press with your finger on the item that you want, an A, a B, an ampersand, a number. You just push on it and you get it. So ultimately, it's very, very simple. But there's a topography to the keyboard which allows you to have a very ergonomic device in a very, very small space. It has an entire keyboard, computer keyboard, every key that you could want, everything that's on your desktop, it fits into about 60% the size of a credit card.
Now, the problem with these little keyboards is that it's so hard. They're so hard to use, and your fingers are so big compared to the buttons you push, and you end up pushing buttons you don't intend to. How did you research how small to make your finger pads, how to create something that fingers could manipulate?
Well, back from my Apple days, the core of Apple is designed for human need. And I started with the human finger, and I went to Harvard Square, the T there, and just got 50 people to press their thumb, all males, to press their thumb onto a piece of paper and give me their fingerprints. And that gave me a nice range on size. And then I stepped backwards from the thumb size. I figured out what the 95% thumb is, so I could design for the 95th percentile. And this keyboard works very comfortably with a large man's thumbs.
Was everybody willing to do it?
Surprisingly, yes. Only one person said no. Everyone is not even questioning. We live in a very open place, I think.
So you didn't even tell them what it was for?
No. I just walked up. I abbreviated it by saying I'm an MIT student, and I think that washes away many sins.
Oh, they're probably used to much crazier behavior from MIT students in Harvard Square. So you got the idea. You did this research. You came up with a proposal. How did you go about getting the patent, and how relentless are patent examiners? Is it like taking your orals as a grad student?
Getting a patent can either be a great pleasure or a tremendous agony. I've had both, and the range between examiners can be very helpful. Some of them are tremendous, and you go through and they say, well, you have a great idea here. You've goofed on the legalities here, and they straighten it out for you, and away you go. And with the keyboard, I had a mixed bag. There was some people who lost drawings, and it was a nightmare for a while. But the first one was a problem. The second one sailed through fairly easily.
How long did it take? Can you sit for years in kind of patent office limbo?
Everyone stays in patent office limbo. It takes about 3 years. And I kept working on the engineering and the marketing and all the other aspects of invention while the patent was being issued.
At what point in the process does your invention actually have to work correctly without bugs?
Correctly without bugs. It depends how much of the company who licenses it is willing to take on. With the keyboard, you really just you have to prove that this is viable. And with a visionary, the visionary will pick it up and know that it can be made to work, and other people need to see it lock, stock, and barrel, drop kick. And since you don't know who you'll be meeting, the farther you bring it through the process, the higher the chances are for your success.
What invention has made you money? Decent money?
I'm still very much on the curve. I mean, peelables brought in a good amount of money. Passit brought in a good amount of money, but they're not. I'm sorry, Passit is the Nerf football with a TV remote control inside. And it's had corporate sales, but it's been really hard to get it into stores. Ironically, again, the people really seem to like it, but it's hard to get the retailers to put it on the shelves. Very frustrating. But both of those things have brought in money for me to keep alive. And the bike seat, I'm hoping for it to come online soon. And then The Tent, which I just finished recently, should hit the stores in fall of 2000.
My guest is David Levy. He's an inventor. As an employee of Apple in the 80s, he helped design the PowerBook. He's now independent. He holds a number of patents on products, including a palm-sized keypad for use on mobile phones and pagers, and a changeable tattoo, a theft-proof bike seat. David, let's take a break now, and then we're going to talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is inventor David Levy. Some of his patents include a patent for a palm-sized keypad for use on electronic devices, also a football-shaped TV remote control, a changeable tattoo, a theft-proof bike seat. Before you went out on your own, you worked at Apple, and this was back in the 80s, kind of a golden period in Apple. What was the climate for engineers? Did you all have free rein?
Oh, it couldn't have been better. The company had lots of money and was very encouraging for people to explore ideas. One of the most memorable events of being at Apple was I was in the research group, and my boss's boss came in and told us that we were screwing up. And this was a little bit perplexing to us because we thought we were doing a pretty good job. And he said, "You people are screwing up big time. I want to see more failures out of you people." And we were totally confused. And the point is that we were a research group. We were supposed to push the envelope. And if we're succeeding, clearly we're not pushing. He wanted to see us fail 80% of the time. And if we weren't failing, we weren't doing what we were setting out to do. And I love that idea. That's largely how I live my life now. I set out to fail. And if I'm not failing a lot of the time, I'm not doing the right stuff.
One of the designs you worked on was the PowerBook. What was your contribution?
Back in 89 or so, there was a Skunkworks project called Companion, and that was the code name. And it was a vision for what the notebook computer could be. And ironically, it still doesn't exist. It was a very advanced concept. And originally, we thought we could have it on the market in a year and a half. And I started working on how people would touch such a thing. No one really knew what a PowerBook would be. And I was working on input devices, and an inventor came into the company with an idea for a touchpad named George Graffiti, and it was clearly far better than anything had happened before. And I worked on incorporating that into what I saw the ergonomics of the PowerBooks to be. And in 89 or so, I made the first usable version of what ultimately became the PowerBooks.
So did you spend a lot of time watching people hold keyboards on their knees in crowded trains? Or
you only need to see that once. I saw the problem and then spent many, many hours in the lab trying to define what the right sizes were of every aspect of the PowerBooks, how far apart the keys would be from each other, top to bottom, left to right, how far apart the pixels should be, where the buttons should be, how they're shaped, the palm rest of the front, its dimensions, etc. All the ergonomic aspects of making the concept work.
Why did you leave Apple?
Partly because I'm easily bored. And after doing the PowerBooks from concept to completion, you can only do that once or twice in a career, I suppose. And at Apple, they had done that, and they didn't want that level of innovation again in the near future. And I wanted to continue to innovate at that level again and again and again. And so I left. I went back to MIT, got a PhD while I've been working on getting patents to come to life.
Is your own house, your own personal life filled with inventions that you use?
Yes. Like yes. On? Well, my bed, my bed,
what's with your bed?
My bed, is designed so that, two people can hold each other, while they're sleeping and your arm doesn't fall asleep. Very useful invention.
Oh, that's brilliant. So it works.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Very simple.
Do you have a tunnel in there? To rest
yeah, it's a crack actually, and the crack if you're not using it, you're not aware that it's there. But if you want to access this thing, you find the crack, which is like at a 30 degree angle, so it's ergonomic. There's that word again, and You just slide your arm in there and it doesn't get smushed.
Do you also have piles of discarded prototypes lying around?
I have boxes, rolling boxes in my office that are full of discarded things.
Like what?
I have a device that I made while I was a graduate student. I couldn't write anymore. My RSI had flared up while I was studying, and I couldn't hold the pen to do the math that I needed to do for quals, and made something that holds my pen for me so that I can write without holding a pen. All the prototypes for the football, the O-ring, which was a device so a condom feels that it's not there, a hand truck so that you can roll a refrigerator down the stairs without straining your back, the something that collects feces from a dog so that the owner doesn't have to reach down and pick it up each time the dog goes to the bathroom.
It gets worse and worse.
Soap metering devices so that when you're doing laundry, you can just turn the thing over and it dispenses one cup without you needing to pick up the other hand and do that messy gyration. An ergonomic thumb wheel so it tells you how loud the volume is in a Walkman. I could go on.
Did you do this when you were a kid, come up with stuff for your mom or your dad or you?
My mom remembers something that I had forgotten, which is when I was 5 or 6, I forget. She was smashing macadamia nuts. I don't know if you've ever done a macadamia nut. They're incredibly hard. And she had hurt her thumb hitting it with a hammer. And I suggested that she put the nut inside of the doormat, this little old rubber slatted doormats, and pushing the macadamia nut inside so it holds it, and then you could hit it with the hammer without injuring your hand. That was the first thing that she remembers.
What's your latest project, if you can talk about it?
My latest project is a posture device. It's a chair, actually, that tells you when you're slouching. Carpal tunnel problems are often associated with poor posture. And back problems associated with poor posture. And so many people have back problems, would love to know when they're not sitting correctly. And this chair is transparent to the user. It sits underneath you like any other chair. You don't know you're in it. But when you start to slouch more than you want to allow yourself to slouch, it reminds you. And it's ultimately a simple thing that I think will help a lot of people.
So will it beep, or are you going to get the airline stewardess voice to say, "You are sitting poorly now"?
I think a gentle, maybe the crashing of ocean waves would be nice.
Well, I wish you luck with your posture drill sergeant. I want to thank you very much for talking with me today on Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
David Levy is an independent inventor based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is Fresh Air.